We all owe them, but very few of us know them. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities. And these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Welcome to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. American Warrior Radio is proud to be partnering with Silencer Central, where they've been making silence simple since 2005. You know, owning a silencer is legal in 41 states. Visit silencercentral.com to find out if they are legal where you live. Then talk to their team of experts about your options. Shooting with a silencer is better for your hearing and can be even more fun. Silencer Central will handle all the paperwork and then ship your silencer directly to your front door once everything is approved. That's silencercentral.com. President Calvin Coolidge said that a nation that forgets its defenders will itself be forgotten. If you've seen the movie We Were Soldiers, Colonel Hal Moore tells his air cavalry soldiers he'll be the first one to step on the battlefield and the last to leave. Toward the end of the movie, there's a scene where his sergeant major reports, "All of our men, living or dead, are off the field, sir." It is only then that Colonel Moore boards the last helicopter, leaving the Battle of Ledrang Valley. It's an American military tradition to never leave a person behind, living or dead. Today, we're going to talk with a federal agency that bears the principal responsibility for fulfilling that promise to those who have fallen in battle. The mission of the Department of Defense POW/MIA accounting agency is to provide the fullest possible accounting for our missing personnel to their families and our nation. It was created in January of 2015 by merging the Defense POW Missing Personnel Office and the Joint POW/MIA Accounting Command, along with several functions of the Air Force Life Sciences Equipment Laboratory. Joining us on American Warrior Radio today to tell us more about this agency and the impact it has on the lives of family members, we have Sean Everett, who is the Media Relations Chief for Outreach and Communications with the DPAA, and also Clark Baldwin, the nephew of Clifford Strickland, the soldier who was captured in the Philippines and died in a Japanese prisoner of war camp on July 29, 1942. Sean and Clark, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I consider myself pretty well educated, Sean, but honestly, I did not know. I mean, I kind of assumed there was an agency out there that did this, but I didn't know that much about the DPAA. Tell us a little bit about your predecessors. I mean, how long have we had a formal federal agency dedicated to recovering these remains?
There's actually been a form of DPAA existing all the way back into the late 70s. The mission originally started off with Vietnam, and then over the years evolved to also encompass recovering our missing from the Korean War, World War II, and all of our conflicts in between.
You know, I find that interesting given that it appears the largest number of still MIA soldiers' remains are from World War II, but we'll talk a little bit about that later. I find it interesting that your office is jointly manned by members of all the branches and then complemented with civilians with some specialized skills. How many total personnel do you have nationwide, John?
We have right around 750 personnel actually across the world, because we have not only our headquarters is in Washington, D.C., we have our biggest lab, anthropological lab, is at Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam in Hawaii. We have another forensic anthropological lab at Offutt Air Force Base just outside of Omaha, Nebraska. And then we have detachments. We have a detachment in Europe, and we have three in Southeast Asia.
Now, I'm curious about this. The facility in Hawaii, is that there because of the proximity to, you know, the huge number of remains still after Korea and Vietnam, or is that just where a senator got some money? Which is not a bad thing.
Honestly, it's No, it's. I think it's mostly because the largest concentration or the largest number of service members still missing from all of our past wars and conflicts are there in the Pacific. World War II, Korea, Vietnam. It's all there in the Pacific, and that is our closest state to everything else that that goes on there. So, you'll hear the military's Indo-PACOM say that that's one of the most strategically important places for the U.S. in the Pacific. And that's the reason that DPAA is there as well.
I tell you, looking at your numbers, I mean, it's a gargantuan task. 81,000 missing from World War II through the current conflicts. 72,115 of those alone are World War II veterans. And as you mentioned, 75% of those losses are in the Indo-Pacific region, with 41,000 lost at sea. So that adds another challenge, if you will. I found it interesting, though, when looking at your website, 128 from the Cold War, which people don't think much about, 2 from Desert Storm, 3 DOD contractors from Iraqi Freedom, and 1 from Operation El Dorado Canyon in Libya, who was an 111 pilot shot down while that bombing campaign was taking place. I'm just kind of curious, are we doing a better job of recovering the remains of our fallen personnel, or is war just different?
You know, I would like to say that we're doing a better job, which we are doing a better job than we've done in the past, between mainly because of technological advancements and things like that. But we're not currently missing any service members from Operations Enduring Freedom or Iraqi Freedom. And I think part of that is wars, conflicts, those were honestly smaller in scale than even Korea or Vietnam or definitely World War II. So it was one of those things that, you know, it's hard to say. I would like to say we're getting better at our job, but I also think the military may be getting better at being able to recover fallen soldiers.
Yeah, you make a good point. It's statistics. I mean, just fewer troops in combat generally is going to translate into fewer casualties. But I, what's also struck me, Sean, as the DOD contractors, your services are not just for military personnel. They may include contractors or civilian employees or even employees of humanitarian agencies too, right?
That's correct. If there's a missing American overseas from one of the conflicts, then we're absolutely going to look for them.
Can you give me an example of someone from a humanitarian agency that might fall into that category?
Yeah, a humanitarian agency, I don't know one of those off the top of my head. I do know that back around the time that I first came on board the agency, this was back in 2019, we had recovered 3 people who were involved in the Air America flights over in Southeast Asia. And they were not part of the DOD. They were actually part of the CIA, but we recovered them. Like I said, this was back in 2018, 2019, pre-COVID. I can't think of one. I would have to do some research and find that out.
Well, yeah, the first thing that came to mind, you know, as far as the current conflicts, I'm guessing those might have been State Department or maybe Blackwater contractors. And, Air America, who allegedly was the CIA. I think we still have to say that. Okay. So walk us through. We've got just about a minute and a half before the first break. But I'm not going to do that because I want to get more in depth with it. Are the families of each missing person, are they assigned a case manager, or is there some sort of a ranking process, or how is that? I'm missing a family member. I contact one of the offices and the paperwork is started. Then what happens? Walk us through what happens next real quick.
Yeah, so basically if someone is missing a service member from one of our past conflicts going back to World War II, they would get in touch with that service member's service casualty office. And in getting in touch with that casualty office, the casualty office would, you know, make sure that there's a file if there wasn't one for that family already. And then they would let us know, hey, this family has gotten in contact with us, and if our historians and researchers had not yet put together a case profile on that specific person, then that person would then be put on the list to make sure we did the research and looked in to see if we could find where they might be. Okay. And we would take information from the family, we'd take information from military records, any information that we could get, eyewitnesses, anything. We take any information that we can get to try to find those service members.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can find out more, visit dpaa.mil. All the contact information is up there for the different branches. Coming up, we'll have the family, a relative of a World War II soldier whose remains were just recovered. We'll be back with more with Clark Baldwin and Sean Everett. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to America Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking about the Department of Defense POW/MIA Accounting Agency, DPAA for short. Learn more, visit dpaa.mil. Their principal mission is to recover the remains of fallen personnel from our military going all the way back to World War II. And we'd like to welcome a very special guest today. Clark Baldwin is, Clark, if I'm not mistaken, you are the nephew of Clifford Strickland.
That's correct.
I've got the official paperwork here on your uncle, but you know that doesn't always tell us that much about the person. Did you know him well? Were you close? And if so, tell us about him.
Well, my uncle unfortunately died in a POW camp in 1942. Wasn't born until 1957. So
okay.
This is my one uncle that I never met. But his story was a very large part of my family and growing up. And my grandmother and grandfather Strickland had 11 kids, and the oldest son actually died as an infant, and my Uncle Clifford was the third oldest and oldest son that survived to adulthood. So I had, counting my Uncle Clifford, there were 10 aunts and uncles, and of course all of them have passed away by now, but definitely was a major part of growing up. We had pictures of Uncle Clifford and lots of family stories surrounding his life before he went to war, and the impact that had on the family when he was lost was enormous.
Clifford was, let me just get this right here, he served with the Army. He's a technician, fifth grade, with the Army Engineers, Aviation Engineers. He was part of the numerous number of our forces who unfortunately were captured when the Philippines fell to the Japanese, and was also among the group who had to participate in just the torturous 65-mile Bataan Death March. And then they were held at the Kabatuan POW camp. More than 2,500 POWs died at that camp, and I tell you, one of the sad things to me about this story, Clark, is, you know, that was the camp that was eventually liberated by some of, back then, our special forces, but unfortunately, your uncle did not make it that far. As best we can tell, the prison camp and historical records show that he died on July 29th, 1942, and was buried in a common grave in the Kabatuan Camp Cemetery. My dad had a schoolmate, I guess I'll call him for lack of a better term, who was drafted and was shipped off to Korea and just plain disappeared, never heard from again.
Right. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I know that still bothers my father. And for your family, you're growing up hearing the stories about your uncle, but how did you process that? Was there ever a sense of complete resignation, or was there always some kind of hope somewhere?
Eventually, the family got to a point where we'll never find him. I even when we got notified, and I had a cousin that had gone to some of the early DPAA meetings, and I think she started going in 2012. And so this process that we knew that there was a possibility that my uncle's remains could be identified began, I think, and Sean might be able to clarify it. I believe in 2015, we got notice of the fact that we may be able to identify his remains, and a request for family DNA samples was made. But I myself, even at that point, was skeptical, I guess, and the family had kind of given up that we'd ever find him. We knew he was in Kabatuan. We knew he had been buried with about 13 of his comrades in arms. What happened during that time is the men who died within a 24-hour period were buried in a common grave. And then they were disinterred in 1945 at the end of the war and buried at the Memorial Cemetery in Manila. And he would have been buried as an unknown at that point, and his name put on the memorial in Manila. So I had my oldest aunt went to the Philippines two or three times just trying to find more information and possibly see if you could find his grave, but at that time, there just wasn't the technical knowledge to be able to identify him any further than what they had done at that point. I would say that we had resigned to the fact that he wouldn't be found. There are personal letters from him that my grandparents had that we still have copies of as a kid. So we've reread those the last time we got together when we knew this was going to happen. And, you know, it just brings him back to life for us to read those personal letters home from him.
Now, Clark, were you the first one notified, the first one contacted by the DPAA?
No, it would have been my cousin Jackie Bolson. Actually, the first one was my oldest living cousin because he's designated as next of kin. And then my cousin Jackie was notified shortly after that because he's kind of assigned her power of attorney over all this matter. And Jackie's the one who's been most diligent about I call her the family bulldog because she just doesn't let go.
It's a somber moment, obviously, but I'm guessing there must have been somewhat of a certainly sense of release and closure, and but maybe a little bit of joy that he was finally coming home.
A lot of mixed emotions. And certainly, I think I speak for the whole family when I say that. Yeah, mixed emotions. There's going to be a big family reunion in June when we have his funeral. But also a sense of we need to do this right. We need to honor this fallen hero. Need to bring Uncle Clifford home. He's going to be buried in the cemetery, in the military part of the cemetery by his parents. And so, yeah, a lot of mixed emotions. And like I say, a sense of making sure we honor him to the best of our ability and not forget what he went through, the sacrifice he and all those hundreds of thousands of men have and women have given to our country so we can enjoy the freedoms we have today.
He was, as I understand it, his remains were accounted for on December 20th, 2023, and then you'll be having his burial, his interment in December of this year, correct?
In June, actually, June of this year, in Colorado.
That's outstanding. And I mean, sir, bless you and your family for what you've had to endure throughout all of this. When someone, a member of our military, goes to war, the whole family goes to war, and it's nice to hear the story of him coming back. When we come back, Clark, I'd like to chat more with you and Sean about the mission and how DPAA does these. I mean, just on the paper, it looks like a pretty amazing and miraculous thing. And I'm glad it had a positive impact on your life, and I'd like to have you continue and share your encouragement with other families out there. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia. You're listening to American Warrior Radio. Don't forget you can find hundreds of podcasts at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Please share these important messages with your friends and associates, and just communicate to all the other civilians who need to hear these stories. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. You know, shooting with a silencer is better for your hearing. It can be more fun. We've been partnering with Silencer Central for years now. They've been making silence simple since 2005. Owning a silencer is legal in 41 states. Visit silencercentral.com to find out if they're legal where you live, and then talk to your team of experts about your options. They'll handle all the paperwork and ship your silencer directly to your front door once everything is approved. That's silencercentral.com. We're back with Sean Everett, who is the Media Relations Chief for Outreach and Communications with the DPAA, and Clark Baldwin, who is a nephew of Clifford Strickland, who was a soldier who perished in World War II, and his remains were just positively identified, in December of last year. Sean, Clark mentioned something that sort of intrigued me because, again, this is a huge task, and honestly, with only several hundred employees, I'm amazed that you're able to achieve what you are, but You know, Clark mentioned a grave with unknowns in it. As you're looking around the globe, is that one of the first stops you're going to make where you know there's remains there, it's just nobody knows who's in that grave?
Absolutely. That's one of the big ways that we are able to identify as many people as we are every year. Our historians and analysts go over all of the records, not only of the service members we know are missing, but the records of the unknowns in those graves, and they piece together the puzzles of where those records overlap and who might be unknowns in those graves.
How many cases, I guess for lack of a better term, do you estimate you work on every year, Sean?
We work on probably touch on thousands of cases every year. Now, as far as how many people are we able to identify, last year we identified 158, and that's in fiscal year 2023, so which really ended at the end of last September. We identified 158 service members during that time, but we got continuous either research or investigation or recovery efforts going on for a number more than that.
Clark, I'm curious, you said, of course, your cousin did most of the heavy lifting on this, but I can't get over the fact that after so many years, just the joy, and I assume that the DPAA was in contact or your cousin was in contact with them as the process moved along. Do you recall, Clark, how long was it from start to finish?
Probably about 10 years from when we kind of had notice of the possibility, I guess, until we found out the end of December. So,
considering the number of missing in action and just the places all around the globe, I'd say that's still a pretty good job. Well done.
Oh, it's incredible work. Yeah, that's a deep. I can't say enough about what the DPAA is doing, and the people there are so incredibly dedicated to the work. You know, it's a calling for them, and you can tell when you meet with the people that this means something to them, and they're really dedicated to the work.
Well, there you go, Sean. I think you just found your latest advocate spokesperson right there. Let's get a camera on this fella.
Absolutely. I had the opportunity to meet Clark a couple of weeks ago there in Phoenix at our family member update, and we did just that. He was on a couple of different local Phoenix TV stations that weekend.
Outstanding. Well, we've got an affiliate in Phoenix, so you'll get another bite at the apple, Clark. Sean, we talked about prioritization. I noticed on your website there was you called the Hurtgen Forest Project, and a lot of Americans probably have heard of the Battle of the Bulge, but very few have heard about the Hurtgen Forest, which was just as bloody and just horrible. And like I said, I've had a number of veterans who fought in that battle. What are the risks that your team faces? Are there areas where urban encroachment might threaten an area that you want to explore for remains, or what are some of the other risks that your teams can face?
Yeah, absolutely. Urban encroachment is part of it. Other parts of it are whether or not remains were ever discovered at all, because a lot of remains that were left on battlefields, some of them were recovered maybe by the locals, maybe by, you know, the American military, maybe by another military, and then they were buried as unknowns somewhere else, and then eventually, usually the, you know, American Grave Registration Command or one version of that after one of the wars was able to find them, tried to identify them, and then wasn't able to bury them as the unknown. But environmental aspects of where they might be, such as, you know, were they in a swamp? Did they crash on the side of a mountain somewhere? Or did they crash and the crash is underwater, or the boat is underwater? There's any number of environmental things, man-made and completely natural, that can impede us from, unfortunately, finding some of these service members.
I assume if you're going up to the top of a 16,000-foot mountain in the Himalayas, that's going to take some special skills. Is that where maybe some of your military partners play a role?
Absolutely. We have mountaineers. We have explosive ordnance disposal folks. We have divers. We have all kinds of people specialty people that can help us get to these places safely, so that we can hopefully find these service members and bring them home.
I'm curious, and maybe you don't know the answer to this or not, but Ben gets a dumb question every show, Sean. Is there a different vibe depending on the service branch? For example, I know many of the sailors that served on the USS Arizona, for example, even though they survived the war, when they die, their remains are interred back on that ship with their shipmates. For these underwater sites, particularly if it was a boat or a ship or a submarine, does the Navy have a policy of saying, no, that's where they're going to remain? It's probably a very dangerous operation in some of these deeper waters to even attempt to recover the remains.
Well, yeah, typically for a sunken Navy vessel, that is, the Navy declares that, you know, that wreck or wherever the remains of that ship are, declares that is the, you know, the final resting place of the sailors and potentially Marines who are on board. So yes, it is one of those things that we don't typically go after sunken vessels like that. Mostly though, because those sunken vessels are in extremely deep water. I know a number of years ago, the USS Indianapolis was found. And even if we could go after it, as in getting permission from, you know, from the Navy and the DOD to go after it, it's too far down for us to be able to send anybody down there to do the underwater archaeological work needed to be done to successfully bring out any remains.
So of those tens of thousands, frankly, there's some that... Well, let me back up and ask the question a different way. So I know the Indianapolis went down where we weren't certain of where its final resting place was on the bottom of the ocean, but we did have a ship's roster. So those sailors were not listed as missing in action. We knew they were more than likely KIA. So they wouldn't have entered your scope of work in the first place.
Potentially not, because if we knew they were definitely on board that vessel when the vessel went down, then they're still technically considered unaccounted for, because no one has laid eyes on them and been able to, you know, bring them home to their families for a proper burial. So they're still technically unaccounted for, and they're still missing. Because, well, quite frankly, like with the USS Indianapolis, we didn't know where it was until just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So they really were missing.
Yeah, the Pacific is a big place. I tell you, John, when we come back, Clark, I'd like to talk more about your time at the recent event in Phoenix, Arizona. We do have a number of listeners up in that area as well. And then maybe, Sean, you can describe some of the other outreach that your organization provides these families. When you think about that, you know, everybody had a mother, a father, a brother, a sister, or children, and so the numbers geometrically are much larger than the ones I cited at the beginning of the program, so I'd like to chat a little bit more about that when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking about the Department of Defense POW/MIA accounting agency. That's a mouthful, Sean. I can see why you just call it the DPAA.MIL. From visiting your website, I see that you do have proactive outreach sessions, for lack of a better word, around the country. And, you know, Clark Baldwin was at the most recent one that took place in Phoenix, Arizona. Clark, tell me a little bit about what did you expect going in, and what was your takeaway coming out?
It was my first one that I had attended in person. I'd seen some Facebook kind of recordings that my cousin Jackie had put out. So I had a little bit of an idea of what they're like. They're very well organized. I think at Phoenix there was, I'm not sure, Sean might have a count, but there was probably 400 or 500 family members at that meeting. Unfortunately, we were the only family. Clifford's family was the only one that had a positive ID at that particular meeting. But I know, I think Sean or one of the other DPAA personnel had indicated they expect maybe 9 at the next family meeting. They're held periodically throughout the year around the nation. Very well organized. There's a large group meeting to start them off, and then there's separate breakout sessions for family members of various war casualties. So for World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and so forth have their own breakout sessions. In our particular case, because we had our Clifford was positively identified, we actually had a longer breakout session where they went through some of the process that we could expect. We actually have an active duty family member flying to Hickam to accompany my Uncle Clifford's body back to Colorado, and funeral arrangements, and then we're also assigned a family casualty officer that will accompany us through the process and kind of help handle some of the communication traffic, if you will. So.
Sure, sure. Now, Sean, this is all paid for by our tax dollars, right? I mean, the transfer of the remains, the burial, maybe even, you know, getting some of the family members to the ceremony?
I know that everything to do with the, yeah, with the transportation of remains, all of that, yes, the burial, the funerals, all that, and the primary next of kin and close family, the service will cover that too, depending on where it is the family wants the service member to be buried.
I just can't get over what a huge undertaking this is, and I'm so proud of you and your team for doing this. I could see where, you know, in a case where there was a battle where you know where the battle took place, so you know that either the remains are still somewhere on that battlefield or buried relatively nearby. But, you know, in cases of, you know, like the Philippine jungles or in Vietnam where it was just a patrol and you know, it's the jungle is taken over, I guess I kind of see your team, Sean, as a kind of a collection of cold case file detectives. And what sort of elements go into the research to achieving closure on a case like this?
On any of our cases, it all starts with our historians and our research analysts. They're the ones who go through, like I said, go through all the military files. They do investigation missions to sometimes go to these local places or places nearby to go through old records there, so in Europe or Southeast Asia or what have you. And they'll do all the research and find all the pieces of the puzzle to start stitching that puzzle together. And once they have a pretty solid idea of where a person might be buried as an unknown, that's when it shifts over and we will either send out a recovery team to a location or we'll disinter remains that are buried as an unknown in one of the numerous American cemeteries overseas. Once we recover remains, then it goes to our laboratory, either in Hawaii or there in Nebraska, kind of depending on where in the world the remains were found. Typically, things from Europe go to our Nebraska lab. Things from the Pacific go to our Hawaii lab. And then that's when our forensic anthropologists get into the game, and they do all the analysis of the bones. We have forensic odontologists who do analysis of the teeth. We check out any of the material evidence that might have been with those remains to correlate, make sure it all the evidence adds up. But we also take DNA samples from those remains. And one of our biggest partners is the Armed Forces Medical Examiner System and their DNA Identification Laboratory in Dover, Delaware. They're the ones who do all of our DNA analysis for us. So we'll take DNA samples of these remains and send them to Dover, and the scientists there will do the DNA analysis, and then we'll take all of those different lines of evidence and put them all together to make a positive identification.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I definitely want to touch on that. You know, I would argue that maybe the first step is one of these family members who contacts your organization at dpaa.mil and says, hey, I've got a missing family member. I'd like to start the process. And one of the more important things is getting those family members to go down there and submit some DNA so that you can do the match. Now, can they just schedule an appointment and go and have that done at their local military base, or is there something special they have to do?
Actually, the best thing to do is to contact the service casualty office for the service that their family member was a part of. And the service casualty office will then send them a DNA kit, similar, not exactly the same, but similar to what you might get from Ancestry.com or 23andMe or one of those other types of services like that. But they'll send you the kit. You can do it right there at your house. You package it back up. You follow the directions, package it back up, and then you send it to the DNA identification laboratory there in Dover.
And, folks, you can find all those contact phone numbers if you visit dpaa.mil. It's all listed right there and can take care of it. Now, I'm just curious. I just got a couple minutes left. But, Sean, you know, there's the famous case of the Japanese soldier, Hiro Onoda, who surrendered in March of 1974 in the Philippines. And I'm curious, have you ever had a case where you had someone listed as MIA and you found off that actually they had just wandered off and they're living a new life somewhere with the Montagnards up in the jungles of Vietnam? Or is that just something fiction that we see on TV?
Yeah, I have not heard of a case like that, at least not in my time with DPAA, and I started working here in 2019, so I've been here for about 5 years. Yeah, I've not heard of a case like that, especially this far out from any of those conflicts. The chances of that would be so minuscule. As far as we know, all of the intel that we have and all the information that we have says that all of the people that we are searching for, unfortunately, are dead and have passed away.
Clark, I'm curious how it makes you feel. To the best of my knowledge, there is no other nation on Earth that would literally go to the ends of the Earth to pursue this mission to the degree that we do here in the United States. And I'm just curious, Clark, how does that make you feel as a family member and a U.S. citizen?
Well, it makes me proud that I'm an American. And I'm proud of our servicemen and women and the work that DPAA is doing. You know, we promise, like Henry Moore said, we won't leave anyone behind. And to see us and our nation and our military and the DPAA so diligently work towards fulfilling that promise is, it's awe-inspiring. It fills a big hole that's been in our family for decades, and now we're finally bringing our uncle home. And that's there's not words to really describe that feeling.
Well, know that we're all praying for your family, and we're very happy for you. And hopefully in that Phoenix meeting, you shared that beacon of hope a little bit with some of the other families, saying, look, it happened to me. It could happen to you as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sean, we've got just about 30 seconds left. What can our listeners do to help your mission?
The biggest thing is if you have a missing service member somewhere back in your family, that DNA is vitally, vitally important. Other than that, you can support in any number of ways. You can volunteer, make sure that your elected officials know that this is a mission that's worth backing. The support and getting the word out is probably the biggest thing. You wouldn't be surprised at how many people just don't even know that we exist. So get the word out. Tell people.
I'm one of them, and so I really appreciate it. Sean Everett, Clark Baldwin, thanks for being with us here on American Warrior Radio and sharing your story with our listeners.
Thank you. Proud to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures will remain in place. Take care.
Listening to American Warrior Radio. Archived episodes may be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com or your favorite podcast platform.